Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Welcome to Aggressive Negotiations, the Star Wars podcast that plumbs the depths of Star Wars in ways that you've only imagined in the past. I'm one of your hosts, Jedi Master John Mills, and with me as always is Jedi Master Matthew Rushing. Matt, how you doing today?
John, I'm doing great. You know, I have just been loving this series that we have been doing about the Jedi, and I was really excited about where we're going to be going tonight because, God, we're just going to be talking about Jedi that we love.
That's
just so much
that's
fun.
That's right. We are going to be talking about Jedi that we love. We're not doing a list show, so don't worry about that. But we're going to talk about some of the Jedi that have stood out to us through time. And it'll probably give everybody a clearer picture of how our vision of the Jedi have formed. I think that as we go through with this discussion, I think it's going to give us a clearer vision of how you view the Jedi and how I view the Jedi and some of the comments we've made in the episodes leading up to this. So let's just go ahead and say the whole reason we're not doing just a simple list show is because I think everybody can guess who your number one Jedi is. And let's just go ahead and confirm it. Go on record right now. Who's your number one favorite Jedi of all time?
It's Obi-Wan Kenobi, John. I mean, the Jedi Master Obi-Wan Kenobi. He's my man. He's my main Jedi squeeze. What can I say?
Yeah, I don't think that surprises anybody. I think that even just listening to this podcast, everybody knows your bromance with Obi-Wan at this point.
It's tight, man. We're best buds. We like to get coffee together, we like to get calf together. Over there at Dex's Diner.
Wait, wouldn't that be Jawa juice?
Jawa juice? Sometimes we shake it up. It just depends on the night. You know, sometimes it's Corellian brandy, too. So, it just depends on what type of night
it's been. Well, we do know Obi-Wan likes a drink, which is a reason to like him.
Yes, he do. So, believe me, that boy can put him away.
Let me ask you a question, though. In one or two sentences, give me your elevator pitch as to why Obi-Wan is the Jedi for you. Why he embodies Jedi-ness, as it were.
I think it's the way that Obi-Wan was able to imbibe what the Jedi wanted to be in the prequel era. Like, he was really, to me, the pinnacle of that. You know, one that was able to let go of attachment mm-hmm. for the greater good of the order. One who was a master of Form 3, you know, so he is a very centered Jedi. And one who also at the same time had great compassion. Obi-Wan is not somebody who doesn't care, but he's also able to put that aside when he needs to be who he's supposed to be as a Jedi.
Okay, so let me ask this question then. Is Obi-Wan your favorite strictly because of the way his character was developed in the prequels? So pre-prequels... Was Obi-Wan still your favorite Jedi?
Well, you know, when I first got into Star Wars, I think my favorite character of all time then was Luke Skywalker.
Okay.
Now, I always liked Obi-Wan, and for me, especially when it was just the original trilogy, it was really sad that, you know, he died. I was honestly heartbroken even the first time I watched the first film. And I was so frustrated that he didn't get to go on because I liked his character a lot. I loved Alec Guinness's portrayal. And so I think what happened is that once the prequels came out, it really grew that character and fleshed him out. And I still love Luke, but everything that I liked about Luke, I was able to just really transfer to Obi-Wan because... I don't know, there was something about especially what happened with the prequels and then connecting him and everything we got in the Clone Wars as well. Like, all of that together it was like the Bermuda Triangle. It all came together and I kind of got lost in it. And I have always just really respected the character of Obi-Wan because he is a character that has character. You know, like supremely for me and watching him, and I think this is why I gravitate toward characters like Superman and Captain America. They are characters who have extreme virtue.
Oh, okay. But see, what's funny is that I would say, this is going to sound weird, with the prequel era and especially with the Clone Wars, I actually view Obi-Wan as, I view him as a great character, and I love him as a character, but he's not a default setting in my brain for a Jedi. That might not make sense, but when I think of Obi-Wan, I don't necessarily associate him with Jedi anymore. I know who his character is and everything, but in the prequels, especially in the Clone Wars cartoon, he seems more like a regular guy who happens to be a Jedi as opposed to a Jedi through and through. It's not a knock, and it's not saying he's a bad Jedi. It's just saying that, like, I think because he's been so fleshed out that I don't see him as just that category of Jedi anymore. And because of that, I view him more as a character where Jedi was a calling for him, but these traits that you see about him were going to be his regardless of whether he was a Jedi. If he had washed out the way that we understand his early story to have been at one point, if he had washed out, he still would have been Obi-Wan Kenobi.
And I think that you may have just hit the nail on the head as to one of the reasons that I love him is that Obi-Wan is Obi-Wan is Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
It wasn't about him being a Jedi or being force sensitive that made him who he was. That just accentuated the goodness that he had.
Okay.
You know, and obviously Obi-Wan has faults. I mean, he's not perfect, and we see those throughout the series.
Sure.
But I think that character that he has was accentuated by the teachings of the Jedi. And he was able to just really bring forth that goodness in himself through that. And I think that's one of the things that I really gravitated toward, because in the end, I felt like he's also a character that even in real life, you can kind of look up to, you
sure.
know, and draw strength from and say, I would like to be like that, you know?
Yeah. Now, see, what's funny is I could see Obi-Wan, I guess, resonates, and I can understand resonating, and this is not in any, like, accept this at face value, that I feel that the reason he resonates on some level with me is because Obi-Wan seems like an attainable level of humanity for anybody to achieve. Like you said, he's a role model. Anybody could become like Obi-Wan and hang around somebody like that, and his positivity rubs off, and so, like, everyday interactions. But, like, when I personally think of Jedi, I think of somebody that is set aloof, like, that, you know, through life sometimes you'll meet somebody where you just meet them and you say, you were meant to do this, this is all you could be, this is the only way you could express who you truly are. And again, not a knock, like, Obi-Wan was Obi-Wan. And though the Jedi might have helped him achieve the best level of himself, I could have seen him be anything else and still be a cool, good, fully expressed person. Whereas, and this might have to do with development time, who knows, I would look at somebody, as everybody I'm sure knows, Qui-Gon, right? For me, Qui-Gon right. resonates, because that's the type of guy where I could see walking down the street and seeing him and seeing, you know, hey, what's that guy's deal? Oh, he's a Jedi. Oh, a Jedi. I like the way he, like, tell me more about that. How do I become like that? You know what I'm saying?
You can tell by the way I use my walk. I'm a woman's man.
I'm not even
going to
acknowledge that. That's shame on you. They don't have disco in Star Wars.
You could just see him walking down the street
in his
Jedi bell bottoms. And
no, see, I'd see Kit Fisto walking with that song.
Oh my gosh,
that's what I
yes.
would see. With that big...
Yes, him and Quinlan Vos. Yeah. Can't you just see them walking with their big old medallions that they stole from Lando?
Well, big old medallions, and Jeruus Sabath would be there as well.
Oh so, my gosh,
you know,
yes.
up the town. Down on the lower level, down on level 1313.
Oh my gosh, they ripped up level 1313.
That's why it was a prohibited level. They ruined the whole joint. So... But Qui-Gon is like the type of guy you'd see. You'd be like, I want some of that. I want to be like that in my life. Like, it's a But what's funny is there's a weird convergence there, because I still hold on to Luke from the childhood idolization of the character. But then, and this might seem other end of the spectrum, somebody who is always in the conversation with me is Mace Windu. Because I admire and respect, even though Mace Windu has a hard edge, admittedly, he has a really terrible bedside manner, so to speak. You know, Anakin comes up to him. I found out who the Sith Lord is. Fine, I'm going to go take care of it. Sit here and shut up. And
right.
If you're right, I'll tell you you did good. Like, yes, he has to work on that aspect of his personality. But I really like that character because he's such a hard ass about everything. You know, he is strict, he is disciplined, and you know that there is, and I've often advocated this thought, there's a darkness inside Mace Windu, and I like that his character.
Well, you can tell that he is keeping the tiger at bay. He is disciplined and regimented because there is a tiger inside that is just roaring to come a nexu just ready to come out.
But see, that's the great thing, is like Mace Windu is the type of guy where if he got locked in a room with a bunch of enemies, I could see him pulling off that classic old line, "You don't understand, I'm not locked in here with you, you're locked in here with me," you know, that classic Rorschach line from Watchmen. And it
exactly, you know, he is kind of Rorschach, right? Isn't he?
And the thing is, I actually really like characters like that, because it's that acknowledgement. Everybody has like a little bit of darkness in them. Would you agree with that? At least a little bit of darkness in them?
Well, yeah. And it's interesting, too, because, you know, think about this. What if Mace had been Anakin's master?
Oh,
don't you think though that he could have helped Anakin understand that darkness inside of him and maybe helped him figure that out?
You know, that's actually a really terrific angle that I hadn't considered. Because when you said that, I instantly went toward, oh, well, there are your two Sith right there. You know, if Windu kills the Emperor or kills Palpatine at that point, he turns and he looks at Anakin. He's like, all right, let's tear this S up. And, you know, they totally take over. But that is a great point. Windu would have been a good teacher for Anakin, because Anakin carried around a lot of rage and regret in his heart.
Mm-hmm. He
and
did.
Windu would have been... See, that's one of the things that I think is interesting, is I think what makes Obi-Wan so cool and why I understand him resonating is everything we said before, but also the fact that Obi-Wan never... And this is a character trait that I really like. Obi-Wan never viewed his learning as complete. And that's why at the end of episode three...
That is so true.
Right. At the end of episode three, when Yoda says, I have more to teach you, Mace Windu's attitude would have been like, please, I already know everything. Whereas Obi-Wan's like, oh yeah, I want to learn more. You know?
Well, and I think that's the thing that you hit it on the head that I really love about Obi-Wan Kenobi, is that he is very humble. You know, he doesn't think highly of himself. In fact, that's the thing that I love about the episode 3 novelization is when he's having the conversation with Mace Windu that he is remembering, and Mace is telling him why they're sending him to face off against Grievous. And he's saying, look, you're the greatest Jedi. You know, we all make up for our inadequacies. You know, he's like, me, Mace Windu, I use Vapod because I have to rein in my darkness. Yoda uses his form because he's making up for the fact that he's a short little shrimp.
Right.
You know, he doesn't say it like that, but that's really the point.
It's the implication.
And he's saying, look, you're the master of form 3, which is the basic form with the most balance. You have achieved what everybody here wants and nobody else can get, because you don't believe that you've achieved it ever.
Right.
And I think that's the thing that always attracted me to Obi-Wan Kenobi, is that he was, I'm going to quote a stupid country song from back in the day. There's the song is, "She don't know she's beautiful," but Obi-Wan didn't know he was powerful, but he was.
Right.
And that's what made him so powerful, is because he didn't flaunt it or even believe that he was. And I think that was what was so cool about that character, is he had all this power and could have been the greatest thing ever, and he never takes it upon himself to try and be that, you know? Like, he doesn't want to be a Yoda. He doesn't think he'll be a Yoda. But, well,
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's a really, it's cool. No, cool.
I do know what you're saying. And I think that even without reading that episode 3 novelization, for those who haven't, there's that moment in episode 2 where Anakin's talking about him. And he's talking about Obi-Wan's virtues. And he says he's as powerful as Master Windu and as wise as Master Yoda. Like, Anakin actually mm-hmm. praises him. And it, like, Anakin's whole problem is that he's being held back. But yeah, in that one moment on film is a direct textual reference to how great Obi-Wan truly is, even though he doesn't carry himself that way. But what's interesting is we're sitting here, we're talking about Jedi and wonderful expressions of Jedi-ness. And I think there's an elephant in the room sort of thing here with Anakin. Yes, Anakin fell. Is Anakin a failure as a Jedi simply because he fell? Or was he always a terrible Jedi?
Oh, gosh. I think Anakin was always a terrible Jedi because being a Jedi for him was about what he could get out of it.
Right.
And that's not the Jedi way, obviously. I mean, what's funny is that he is the antithesis to what Obi-Wan is.
Right.
And Obi-Wan is never able to get that. I mean, he's always trying to get that out of Anakin, but he can't because there's a little bit too much compassion, I think, mm-hmm. in Obi-Wan to kind of do what Mace Windu would do, which was just break that MF right. and make him into his own mold, you know, like really take him down and then build him back up. And Obi-Wan doesn't have the ability to do that. And I think, you know, part of that is Obi-Wan's inexperience. He's never trained anyone before. And two, I think it really, you can see that frustration in Obi-Wan because he's been teaching the same lessons over and over again, and Anakin just ain't learning. I mean, look at episode 2.
Sure.
I mean, he's like, you will remember your place, young one. He keeps trying to bring him down, but it's just, he can't get through that thick skull because Anakin,
well,
he's in his own little
okay,
world.
Okay, but there is a flaw with Obi-Wan, and the flaw with Obi-Wan is he's very much do as I say, not as I do. Because he'll sit there and he'll knock on Anakin for being impetuous, but he's the one that jumps right. out the window after the assassin droid in episode 2. You know, 5
well,
billion stories
true,
up in the air and everything like that. So
right. But you have to remember, though, too, is that there is a difference in the sense that Obi-Wan Kenobi is a fully trained Jedi Knight at that point, knows his own abilities, and knows what he's doing. You know, and there is a sense anytime, you know, you're training somebody, mm-hmm. there are going to be things that they can't do yet.
I throw the challenge flag on that. I want to move on, but, you know, I think I've teased.
I think we need to have a whole episode about Anakin and Obi-Wan relationship.
Well, no, I want to put Obi-Wan Kenobi on trial and you're going to be his defense lawyer. Okay.
Ooh, okay,
because what I'm going to say is, okay, he knows his abilities. Yeah, but if Anakin hadn't jumped in the speeder to come and save him, he was done because that droid got shot out from between his hands. But we've been talking about sort of the major character Jedi on film. Who are some of the, and of course, including television, because I already know who I would pick, you know, as a quote unquote television character. Obviously, I think we would both pick the same one. But who on, you know, films and TV would you point to for somebody who's maybe not as steeped in the lore as we are and say that, you know, that woman, that's a great Jedi, or that, and let me tell you why that alien is a great Jedi. That sort of, who's the supporting cast? Like, you have Obi-Wan as your paragon of Jedi-ness. Who do you have in, as his supporting cast, the support for your argument for what a Jedi should be?
You know, this is going to be, I think, an interesting pick, but who I really liked, especially, and it's because of the Clone Wars, I really liked Aayla Secura.
Yeah.
And she didn't get a lot of play, but there's the great arc that they did with her and Anakin and Ahsoka. Mm. And one, it was really interesting to watch Ahsoka with a female master. It was always interested when they did that with her. They also did that with her and Luminara mm-hmm. When they were after Ventress. And so I always liked that because it was great to see that dynamic. But what I liked about her is that she was reminiscent of an Obi-Wan type character. She had a lot of those same sensibilities, and she was able to really instill, especially in that arc in Ahsoka, some of the basic Jedi tenets of when to put the mission above persons of interest, you know, for because Anakin had gotten mm-hmm. hurt, and she was helping Ahsoka understand that, yes, I know you want to save your master, but we have to do this stuff first,
right.
You know, and you have to trust the people around you. And what I loved about that was just the way that she was gently teaching Ahsoka, and she had a really great way about her. And, she also takes on the Zillow Beast with Yoda.
That was
even though great. Lightsabers yeah. can't do anything against it, you know, she's up there with him bouncing around, very trusted with the Jedi Council. And I think she was just a really interesting character, and would love to have seen her more, because I kind of found her fascinating as a Jedi. And, you know, we just didn't get to see a ton of the Jedi Knights much.
Right.
And I just really liked her. It was a cool character design, too, because it came straight from the comics. And, you know, George was like, oh, I like that. Let's put her in episode 2.
Well, yeah, and she was originally going to be killed in the comic series, and they mm-hmm, decided yeah. at the last second not to, and he'd already decided to put her in the movie. And I as I recall, the story was they were relieved when they were like, oh, thank goodness we didn't kill her, because how are you going to explain yeah. that one away? You know, it's really interesting. I mean, in terms of the TV show, you have the supporting cast, but I can't get away from Ahsoka. Would you point to Ahsoka as a successful Jedi character, or would you point would you point to her as an example of being a good Jedi? I have arguments for and against, but I would be curious for your take on it, because we both love the character very much. But would you point to her as an elite example of a Jedi by the end of it all, by all of the story that we have up to this point?
It was, I didn't put her down as a Jedi because of where she ends up in Rebels. I wanted to, because, and we'll talk about this when we talk about female characters, so where she ranks for that for me. But I think Ahsoka is one of the most fascinating and richly written characters in all of Star Wars. As for her role as a Jedi, it is interesting because she's kind of a synthesis of both of her masters. Mm-hmm. You know, really, Obi-Wan and Anakin are kind of like her, you know, dads
right.
in some ways. You know, they both have a huge influence on who she becomes. And in a lot of ways, she has some of the best of both of them and some of their faults as well. And, you know, when she left the Jedi,
spoilers.
Yes, spoilers, I do think it was a little bit selfish, maybe, not being able to see
really?
Past some things. But at the same time, I also think she had very legitimate reasons for leaving. I think it's all mixed up.
The thing is, I would give Ahsoka the Jedi, and this is the arguing in favor of Ahsoka as a Jedi character, is she goes through all of the training. She does choose to leave before getting that final, you know, pat on the shoulder. But she makes the decision Anakin should have. She makes the decision that so many
yeah.
Jedi should have made by that point, to say, the order's broken, I can't fix it. That is what so many Jedi should have done. That's the only way that the order mm-hmm. would have been motivated to change, is if all of a sudden this war's going on and the Jedi are put in command of it. Ahsoka's the only one that eventually gets to the point. All of the Jedi complain about it. None of the Jedi want to be fighting it. And Ahsoka is the only one we see on screen to say, I'm not going to do this anymore. This isn't what you told me this is going to be.
Right. No, I do agree with you there. I think that is I love how you put that. I really do. You have given me some things to think about, and I think I think she is a successful Jedi character in the sense that she continues on the mission that the Jedi actually had from the beginning, which was to help the weak and the innocent who couldn't help themselves, and she is very clearly still doing that in Rebels. And also, this is what's so amazing, and especially in the last episode, so huge spoilers here if you haven't seen that last episode of Rebels so far, but she is actively also looking for a way to redeem her master, who she knows has become Darth Vader, which means Luke was not the only person who believed that Anakin could be turned.
See,
Ahsoka did too.
See, okay. See, I don't I don't think Ahsoka knows what she wants to do with that information yet. I think that she feels guilt because she's putting two and two together, and that vision is sort of false to her. There's nothing she could have done to stop Anakin from...
Well, yes.
Her being there, she just would have gotten killed. You know, like...
Probably.
Yeah, she would have been done. So, I mean, that whole thing is... that. I mean, that's an interesting thing that I'm sure we'll be unpacking, you know, as we go forward.
That deserves its own episode thing,
I mean, we're recording this at, like, the midpoint of the second... Like, it's the midpoint break of Rebels or for the second season, but whatever. But, but discussion of Rebels takes me to Kanan. Okay.
Yeah.
Kanan, spoilers, we now see in a vision is elevated to the rank of Jedi Knight remotely, Jedi Correspondence School. I think we said that before. Do you count Kanan as a good example of a Jedi? Or do you feel that Yoda's back is against the wall and he gives him this final vision and he's like, okay, I need you to believe you're a Jedi. Go out and do things.
I will argue that Kanan is a good Jedi because he learned something that a lot of Jedi didn't, especially throughout the Clone Wars. And it's the same lesson that Yoda was trying to get Ezra to understand, which is... it's how Jedi do things, why they do things. Are they driven by fear, or will they be able to let go? And Kanan is in that fight with that temple guard, realizes that he shouldn't be fighting at all.
Right.
And not only that, but that Ezra is not his responsibility in the sense that he can't make all his decisions for him. He can only train him the best he can, kind of like, you know, the Bible verse, you know, train him up in the way he shall go, and when he's old, he will not depart from it, in Proverbs. Mm-hmm. And hopefully, that won't happen to Ezra. And he is able to do something that very few Jedi were able to do, which was to let go. And, you know, I mean, it took Obi-Wan a really long time for that to happen. It took till Mustafar for him to let go of Anakin.
That opens up the whole question about the trials, which... you know, like, well, if Obi-Wan hadn't let go, how could he be elevated to the blah, blah, blah? But anyway, okay. So I accept Kanan as a valid Jedi character. Do you have anybody else that sort of stands out along the way? Somebody else that jumps out at you where you say, that's a Jedi? Like, is there somebody from the comics or the books that jumps out at you? And you can't use any of those disqualified EU books anymore. They're not allowed. Yeah. Qornhorn no longer exists.
Yeah, I would have said Mara Jade, but, you know, never mind. I'm going to use it because all the way back out, Knights of the Republic, the video game, had Bastila Shan.
Oh, right.
And she was really cool.
Yeah.
And a really interesting Jedi character. And I really liked her because she had a lot of nuance to her. And... of course, she also had a double-bladed lightsaber, which is super sweet.
Yeah.
And I loved that game because of the way that it gave you an insight into the Jedi a very long time ago. And I she's a character that for me that always stood out that I really liked. And because she was just a little bit different. She was kind of prickly. You know, she wasn't soft or sweet or anything like that. She was hard-nosed. She had a little bit of the mace in her in that sense. And but yet by the end of the game, you know, depending on how you played it, she had a really interesting arc. And I just really enjoyed getting to play a Jedi like that because it was very different from even prequel era or anything else. And so she's a character for me that always kind of stood out. Anyone for you from comics or books or games or anything?
You know, I do want to say I never played Knights of the Old Republic, but I know that Bastila Shan appeared somewhere in comics that I read. She was a crossover. Didn't they use her in later materials or something like that? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but
I believe they did. But I'd have to go look it up. It's been so long since I read so much of that old comic, all those old comics and stuff like that. It gets hard to remember after you know how many years of Star Wars and hundreds of books, it seems like, and thousands of comics.
Yeah, right. all of that stuff I could have done better in college had I been paying less attention to Star Wars. But hey.
Right, exactly.
Life is full of regrets. You know, the only character left that I really want to show some love to is one that we mentioned but didn't spend much time on, which was Luke. I am thrilled that Luke is going to have a role in episode 8.
Yeah, me too.
As opposed to a scene. Because I've always said, growing up, I wanted to be Han, because Han was the wisecracker and the cool guy and the had the great ship. And, you know, like, he was cool. He was neat, man. But when I grew up, it wasn't when I was a kid. It was when I grew up that I got a real affinity for Luke, because he was the character that learned to make sacrifices for the sake of everybody else. He didn't exist for the idea of anything but sacrifice of self. And, you know, we've praised him before, but I really think Luke gets overlooked a lot, because you actually, I would say, of all of the Jedi that you see on screen, the two that you actually see complete a journey from non-Jedi-ness, actually view their journey in enough detail, I should say, to make it truly rich and rewarding in terms of a Jedi story arc, is Luke and Ahsoka, because they skip over the core part of Anakin's development from episode 1 to episode 2, which is why I'm so glad that they have a comic series exploring that time between episodes 1 and 2 with Obi-Wan and Anakin.
Yeah, me too.
Because it's always frustrated me that they didn't mine that time, and that's always been sort of the thing that blunted Anakin's character arc, I think, for a lot of people, is you didn't see that Dagobah moment.
Yes.
Luke had the Dagobah moment where you see everything click for him before he runs off to, I mean, yes, he runs off to Cloud City and they don't want to blah, 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 blah. But you do see scenes where he starts to understand his place in the world, as it were. Whereas with Anakin, it, you know, anyway, whole other discussion. But then, you know, Ahsoka, you see go from child to adult, basically living, you know, and turning out to live the Jedi way.
Yeah.
So I'll be very interested. I think Rey has the potential to become a terrific Jedi character. And dare I say it, because I know nothing about episode 8, but I know that the guy is in the gym all the time. I think that Finn could wind up becoming a neat Jedi too. And that would be,
he is not going to be a Jedi.
I would be totally fine with it if he became a Jedi.
Okay. I think what we talked about before, you know, Luke needs to go, and just, it needs to be one Jedi, one person.
Oh, I know. It would be a mistake for Luke to train more than one person at a time, but I still think Finn has the core character necessary to become a Jedi if he were to decide going down that path.
A couple of other Jedi that I just really enjoyed, especially from one from the Clone Wars, Tara Sanube, from Lightsaber Lost.
The old guy. Yeah.
Yes.
I'm terrible with names.
He is so fun. And what's great about him is that he gives you a picture of what older Jedi are like that aren't just Yoda.
Right.
You know, and his wisdom and again, the way he is so patient with Ahsoka, and, you know, he is gently teaching her these lessons, but he's teaching. And he's such a great character, and he had to get a mention on this show.
And I'm glad you do mention him, because I think that there's a certain Qui-Gon-ness to him as well.
Because
happen, and Ahsoka's having that, oh my gosh, this bad thing is happening. And he's like, don't worry, we got it. Well, there's always a bigger fish, that sort of moment. No, good pull. That's a really good pull.
Yeah, thank you. You know, it was funny because I was kind of thinking through some Jedi tonight and just writing down names so I didn't forget. And he came to my mind. I was like, he needs a mention. The other one that I always thought was really interesting, and especially what we got in the Clone Wars, and then, you know, she showed up in some games and things like that, was Shaak-T.
And oh, poor Shaak-T.
I thought she was fascinating.
Poor Shaak-T.
You know, because she was the one we found out was responsible for helping train all the clones at Kamino. Yep. But she also was reprieved from two deaths that were supposed to happen in episode 3. And she turned up in the original Force Unleashed game.
Which is now non-canon, right?
Awesome. Yes, it is non-canon, but it was super awesome.
Oh, I agree. It was super
so
awesome.
So, hey, as far as we know, she's still alive.
You know,
so
I do.
That's pretty awesome.
Let me ask you, though, just as a parting question about Shaak-T. Do you think episode 3 is better if they keep in her murder at the hands of Grievous at the beginning? And if so, yes, no to that. And then yes, no, two, do you think they keep they do you think that the movie improves in any way if they keep her murder in at Anakin's hands in the temple later?
Well, okay.
It doesn't have to be a yes. I'm just saying.
Like, it could have been really cool if it had happened at the beginning, because it would have tied right into the Gendy series. So that's why it would have been cool mm-hmm. if she had died at the beginning. What I always was mad about in the film is that there were some scenes at the temple with Anakin where he was supposed to take on like the Jedi Swordmaster mm-hmm. and things like that. You know, I mean, talk about a fight. It was going to be Nick Garrard who had taught the boys how to sword fight in right. the first place. I mean, he was the one who helped them learn how to do what they did. So can you imagine that fight? And yeah, it would have been neat to see her die at the hands of Anakin, just because, you know, I mean, gosh, on top of killing younglings, I mean, killing somebody like Shaak-Ti, who always seems so regal and so,
yeah,
you know, there's just something about her that it just kind of drew you in and made you feel comfortable that,
Yeah,
killing her in kind of cold blood the way he did, too, where he just runs it through her back is just, I mean, it's just heartless and
but it's
awful.
But it does speak back to Lucas cut that, because when he cut the Grievous thing, and then later when he had it, he cut that take on it. I remember reading his reasoning was Anakin and a bunch of clone troopers have come into the temple. There's no way she would have just been sitting there meditating. There's no way he could have just
exactly.
worked his way
that
there without
no
her
sense
knowing.
At all.
And I'm
no, she would have been out there, you know, right. kicking ass and taking names too. Yeah.
So yeah.
But no, I think I honestly love that if they ever wanted to, they could pull her out of, you know, retirement, you know, or wherever she ended up, because she's still alive for all we know. And I think
it'd be
really
they,
cool to have her character.
Like, wait a minute. Didn't the Inquisitor use her bones as bait in season one?
No, that was Luminara.
Ah, it was Luminara. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but good. Well, okay. I wanted to, John, I wanted to kind of surprise you because I'd been thinking a little bit about this.
I love surprises.
And so we learn in the Yoda arc that only a very few Jedi are going to be able to bring their spirit back from the Force.
And everybody else just becomes worm food.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. And I thought this was interesting. So think about this. So Yoda trains Dooku, who trains Qui-Gon, mm-hmm. who trains Obi-Wan, who trains mm-hmm. Anakin. Qui-Gon's the one who learns from the wills from the beginning. Like, he's the one who first understands how to bring his consciousness back into the Force. Now, he can't do it fully because his training was cut down because he got killed by, you know, Darth Maul. Yeah. But then he instructs Yoda, who then instructs Obi-Wan, who will apparently, I don't know how it happens, but, you know, Anakin ends up as a ghost, too. So, interesting to think of that line of who is trained.
Mm-hmm.
Who are the ones that are special enough in the Force to, you know, be kept around?
Right, so...
And I think, mm-hmm. I thought about, what a line. Like, Yoda has an interesting heritage, but it's also really strong. That's a crazy thought.
I would say this, that I think that the exclusivity of the afterlife is something that, at least on a subconscious level, has rankled some fans, because... I think with the original trilogy, the feeling always was, oh, well, everybody's going to become a blue ghost. And then Lucas basically revises it, and he's like, no, not even the Jedi have a guaranteed ticket. It's like, well, what, that sucks. What the? What? How do I get one? You know, like that sort of thing. But I would say that with the Anakin aspect, why does Anakin come back? I think that it's an easy dodge to say, well, he's the chosen one. And so the Force was like, your mission is done. And he's literally lived in hell for decades. And so it's like, okay, you did your penance. So fine, you can come back. But I would throw this out there, and I think it's a good spin. Why can't it be that Yoda and Obi-Wan worked together to bring Anakin back? Their love, Luke's love for Anakin redeems him. Anakin dies, Yoda and Obi-Wan have been preparing for this moment, hoping he would turn. And so when he crosses over, they're there to help guide him back. So it doesn't need to be that Anakin got trained how to bring himself back. He has people on the other side who love him and bring him back, help him achieve that consciousness.
Yeah, no, I really like that because I think it fits with the idea that, you know, Yoda never tells Luke he has to kill his father, but he does tell him he has to confront him.
Obi-Wan.
He never says, you have to... Obi-Wan is the one who said, when he Luke says, I can't kill my own father, and he says, well, then the Emperor has already won. But Yoda doesn't say that. He just says, you need to confront Vader. You need to confront that darkness.
Okay, I mean...
you know what I'm saying? Like, So I don't know if Yoda might not have always felt like that would be the way to go, because it also connects with what Yoda tells Ezra.
Mm.
You know, like that makes better through line for me that Yoda has realized the way is not always to fight. It's the way we fight and what we fight for. Luke is fighting. He's just fighting for his father to be redeemed. Not fighting as in he's going to whip out his lightsaber and cut his, you know, dad's hands off again. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, there's a thing to fight for, but what Luke is fighting for is something that goes much deeper than just the root. I mean, the surface level problem.
Right.
He's going at the heart of the problem, which is Vader's heart.
Okay, I accept that. Yeah, no, I mean, Luke is working toward Vader's redemption. Absolutely.
Well, and that, yeah, I like what you said about Obi-Wan and Yoda. I think that makes a lot of sense. So I just thought that was something that was interesting, talking about all these Jedi. And obviously, you know, Yoda and Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan are people's favorite Jedis, you know. But when you kind of see the line that's there, you know, like this direct succession and where they end up in the end, it's pretty incredible to think that in that line, Dooku's the only one who ends up on the outs. You know, everybody else...
Yeah.
Ends up in Blue Jedi Heaven.
Yeah, well, yeah. I think that's a...
Sorry, Dooku.
<yeah. laughs> You lose.
Oh, man.
Well, you know, this has been yet another fascinating discussion. I think that there's a little bit of clarity for the two of us here about how we view the Jedi and how we approach them. But before we go, I want to make sure everybody knows where they can find us online, Matthew. And you mind letting them know where they can go ahead and find us?
Oh, yeah, of course. Now, we are on thenerdparty.com. So if you just type in thenerdparty.com there online, you'll find our show. So be sure to do that. If you'd like to send us an email, we'd love to have that kind of contact for me. We love getting emails from the listeners. Just send it to an@thenerdparty.com. That'll come straight to John and I. And then, of course, you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/thenerdparty. And we're also on Twitter at The Jedi Masters. You'll want to make sure you capitalize The Jedi and Masters, and you'll find us there. And we love having followers. It's a good time. We try to make sure that you have all the latest information of what's going on the show and, of course, just around the Star Wars galaxy. So be sure to follow us there for all the latest news on aggressive negotiations. Now, John, just as important as following us in all those places, and I just want to mention before that too, hit us up on iTunes.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, subscribe. One, because you're going to get the show the minute that I press the button to make it go live. You're going to get it. And then, of course, give us a star rating and review. We're going to be reading some of those out next week, and we'd love to have some new ones to do that. So please go over there, help the show grow, because honestly, it's kind of weird the way iTunes works, but it's the star ratings and reviews that really help us be more prevalent and in the search engine when people search for, say, Star Wars podcasts. We'll come up first if we have more star ratings and reviews. So we really appreciate all those who've already done that.
We do. We appreciate it very, very, very much. More than we can say. And
yes.
Yeah. More than we can say, for sure. For sure. So, I mean, that's where they can find the show. Where can they find you?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. I'm on the Trek FM network, where I'm talking Deep Space Nine with my friend Christopher Jones on The Orb. I'm also on Literary Treks with Dan Gunther, where we're talking about the books and the comics of Star Trek. We also get the opportunity to interview the authors. It's a lot of fun. In fact, our most recent episode, we just had an interview with James Swallow about his new book, so be sure to check that out. I do the 602 Club, which is our general geek show there. We cover all sorts of things. I mean, anywhere from, I mean, we cover the wars, of course, because you got to. But, I mean, we do comic book movies and spy movies and genre movies. I just, everything we can think of that we can get our hands on and actually get a chance to do. So check
including
that out.
Including misguided reviews of Harry Potter movies.
Oh, you be quiet. Yeah. So yeah, it's so much fun. I hope you will check that out as well. Now, John, I know that you have some great places online that everybody needs to be following you. So make sure the listeners know where that is.
Well, you can find me on Twitter at Kessel Junkie. You can find me on the Trek FM network as part of a podcast called Commentary Trek Stars that I have the pleasure of co-hosting with Mike Schindler. We examine the non-Trek work of Trek creators. And I am on a podcast called Words with Nerds with my pal Craig, where we explore... We have a unique take on a lot of things. And I think you all have a good chuckle if you come on over and check us out. So please do. And other than that, if you shine a big signal in the sky, I will show up because I too would like to meet that man.
Well, John, I think it's time to close negotiations.
Matthew, negotiations are closed.